Concerning why we don't. Appreciate the singing of the song, Give Me the Bible. I brought that book with me today, and that's where we're going to be making our appeal. With the digital age, I've come to realize that sometimes we're not as familiar, perhaps, with finding and locating passages like we used to be a few years ago. We're going to be covering a lot of territory. You may or may not have time to turn to all of the passages mentioned, but you might just like to jot those down at least, that you might have occasion to go back and read and study. I expect these lessons will also be recorded, and if you get a recording, you could always go back and push pause from time to time if you need to. We're going to cover a lot of territory today as we talk about why we don't keep the law of Moses. That's an important study. Especially when you talk with folks who are involved in denominationalism, a religious error, because they've not learned that the Old Testament has served its purpose and is no longer binding. And they seek to justify their practices by appeal to the Old Testament law. And you'll find that there are some brethren even who have been made to believe that there's just one continuous covenant, although the book reveals that there are two covenants. In fact, in the book of Galatians and Hebrews, there are statements along the line that there are two, T-W-O, covenants. But as we start out in talking about why we don't keep the law of Moses, it needs to be reminded that there is no distinction in the law of God and the law of Moses. That's important when you study with a Sabbath keeper. You may make the point that the law of Moses is no longer binding, and when you get through with all that, they'll agree with you, because in their mind, they've been making a distinction between the law of God and the law of Moses. They tell us that the Ten Commandments constitute the law of God, and that's still binding. And then the rest of the law, which they term the ceremonial law, that's the law of Moses, and that's the part that's been done away. And so it becomes our task to simply show that there is no such distinction. They're one and the same law. That's easily done from showing that God gave the law of Moses and Moses gave the law of God. In 2 Chronicles 34, during the good reign of Josiah, we read in verse 14 where they brought out the money that was brought into the house of the Lord. And Hilkiah the priest found a book of the law of the Lord given by Moses. You might underscore in 2 Chronicles 34, 14, the law of the Lord given by Moses. And so Moses is said to have given the law of the Lord. And in a companion passage in the book of Ezra, as we read of the children out of captivity. And we're introduced to Ezra, ready to scribe, in Ezra chapter 7 and verse 6. The Bible talks about Ezra went up from Babylon. He was a ready scribe in the law of Moses, which the Lord God of Israel had given. And so in this text, we read where God is said to have given the law of Moses. So if Moses gave the law of God and God gave the law of Moses, then surely you can see they're one and the same law. And as you come to the New Testament book of Luke, you'll find that there are terms and expressions that are used interchangeably. In Luke 2 and in verse 22, mention is made of the law of Moses when the days of her purification, that is Mary, as she had given birth to Jesus, were accomplished. They brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. Notice now in verse 23, as it is written where? In the law of the Lord. And so in verse 22, we have the law of Moses, and in verse 23, reference is made to the law of the Lord. You might highlight those. Now, my question is, what is written in the law of the Lord? Look at verse 23. Every male that openeth the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. Now, the Sabbath keeper tells us that the law of the Lord is the Ten Commandments, recorded in Exodus 20 and repeated in Deuteronomy 5. But where in the Ten Commandments do you read where every male that openeth the womb shall be called holy to the Lord? Nowhere to be found in the Ten Commandments. That's revealed in Exodus 13 and verse 2. Yet notice, please, that it's said to be in the law of the Lord. And in verse 24, to offer sacrifice according to that which is said. Said where? In the law of the Lord. You ought to highlight that. What's said in the law of the Lord? A pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. You can search all you want in the Ten Commandments and you'll find no mention of turtle doves or pigeons. And yet according to Luke 2 and 24, they're in the law of the Lord. And so what are we learning? We're learning that there is no distinction between the law of Moses and the law of the Lord. In verse 27, the last two words are the law. And so you see some expressions that are equivalent. Verse 39, when they performed all things according to what? The law of the Lord. You got to highlight that. And so you have the law of Moses, verse 22, the law of the Lord, verse 23, the law of the Lord, verse 24, the law, verse 27, and the law of the Lord, verse 39. All of those are equivalent. And there are things said to be in the law of the Lord that are nowhere found in the Ten Commandments. And so that's pretty good evidence, is it not? That when the Sabbath keeper makes a distinction between the law of God and the law of Moses, they're making a distinction the Bible nowhere makes. And so when the law of Moses was done away, the whole thing was done away, wasn't it? Now, why don't we keep the law of Moses, the law given by God through Moses, or the law of Moses given by God? Well, there are a number of reasons, and I've compiled a list of 15 with an abundant supply of scriptures I'd like to share with you as to why we don't keep the law of Moses. First of all, we don't keep the law of Moses because it wasn't given to us. When you go back to the book of Exodus in chapter 20, where the Ten Commandments are recorded, notice God spake all these words saying. One of the basic rules of Bible study is to consider who is being spoken to. And in verse 2, consider who's being spoken to when the law was given. He said, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And so this law was given to those who had been brought out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You ever been in Egypt? I don't think so. Well, maybe you have, but have you been in bondage in Egypt? Probably not. And so it wasn't given to us, was it? And then where the law was repeated in Deuteronomy 5 to another generation. You remember they'd wandered through the wilderness until a generation of people passed from the scene. And in Deuteronomy 5, 1 through 3, Moses called. Who'd he call? All Israel. And said unto them, Hear who? Hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your ears this day, that ye may learn them and keep and do them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Lord made not this covenant with our fathers, but with us, even us who are all of us here alive this day. You ought to underscore us, as that has reference to, O Israel. And then when Paul wrote the saints at Rome, in Romans 9 and verse 4, he said, who are Israelites? He ought to circle Israelites. And then he said, to whom, and that personal pronoun whom refers back to the Israelites. Pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law and the service of God and the promises. And so the giving of the law pertained to the Israelites. And so we don't keep the law of Moses because it wasn't given to us. But as we make our way through the scriptures to appreciate why we don't keep the law of Moses, there's another reason why we don't keep the law, and that is because it's been fulfilled. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 17, the Lord said in the great Sermon on the Mount, think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle. That's like the dotting of the I, the crossing of the T. Shall no wise pass from the law, till all be fulfilled. Now, he didn't say the law was going to be in force without a limited time. But he said, till all be fulfilled. And when you come to the book of Luke in chapter 24, as Jesus meets with his disciples, he says in verse 44, these are the words which I spake unto you while I was yet with you, that all things must be fulfilled, which were written in the law of Moses and in the prophets and in the Psalms concerning me. And so the law would not pass till all was fulfilled. And when you come to the testimony of the apostles, they bear witness to the fact that all was fulfilled. Solomon did that in his, or Peter rather, in his sermon at Solomon's porch in Acts chapter 3. When in verse 18 he said, those things which God before had showed by the mouth of all his prophets that Christ should suffer. Listen, he has so fulfilled. And then if that's not enough for us, Paul in his preaching at Antioch and Pisidia affirmed that all was fulfilled in Acts chapter 13. In fact, this is the fulfillment chapter, if you will. And that word fulfilled is used so many times. In Acts 13, in the midst of Paul's preaching, he said in verse 25, as John fulfilled his course. You ought to underscore, circle that word fulfilled. What do you say about John? Fulfilled his course. And then in verse 27, he spoke of the voices of the prophets, which are read every Sabbath day. Listen, they have fulfilled them in condemning him. And then verse 29, when they had fulfilled, how much was fulfilled, Paul? All that was written of him. They took him down from the tree and laid him in a sepulcher. And so you ought to underscore the fact that all was fulfilled. And in verse 33, God hath fulfilled the same unto us their children, that he hath raised up Jesus again. And so why don't we keep the law of Moses? Because it's been fulfilled. Now, you think of an NBA player, for example. We just finished the season. The Warriors were crowned the champions of the 2018 season. And when an NBA basketball player fulfills his contract, he becomes a free agent. And he's free to sign a new contract. And when a new agreement is reached, then what happens to the old contract? The old contract ceases to be operative, doesn't it? And so when Christ fulfilled the law and the new covenant became effective, then the old covenant, the Old Testament, the law of Moses, ceased to be a force. It's been fulfilled, and thus we don't keep it. Another reason why we don't keep the law of Moses is because we are dead to it and we've been delivered from it. In Romans chapter 7, we often quote verses 2 and 3 with reference to marriage, divorce, and remarriage. But really, that's a secondary lesson. He's really teaching a law lesson, and he's using the marriage relationship as an illustration of those truths. He said in Romans 7:1, "Know ye not, brethren, for I speak to them that know the law, how that the law hath dominion over man as long as he liveth. For the woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband so long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then if while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, she should be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man." Here comes Paul's application, verse 4. "Wherefore, my brethren, ye also become dead to the law by the body of Christ, that ye should be married to another, even to him who is raised from the dead, that we should bring forth fruit unto God." Notice, please, the expression "dead to the law." The word "dead" means separated from. And so we're dead to or separated from the law. And then as you drop down to verse 6, he says, "Now we are what, Paul? Delivered from the law." Underscore "delivered from." That literally means discharged from. And the question is, from which law have we been delivered or discharged? And to which law have we become dead or separated? The answer is verse 7. He said, "What shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. Nay, I had not known sin but by the law. For I had not known lust except the law had said." What did the law say? "Thou shalt not covet." Notice, that's a quote from the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20 and verse 17. Which the Sabbath keepers tell us is the law of God and is still binding. Yet Paul quoted from the Ten Commandments and said we are dead to that law and we've been delivered from that law. And in this context, he shows that to be under two laws at the same time is to be guilty of spiritual adultery. Just like the woman that is married to another man while her husband is alive is guilty of adultery, she's called an adulteress. One of the consequences, if you're married to Christ, you claim to be married to Christ, and you go back and keep the law of Moses, that makes you a spiritual adulteress. Did you realize that? And so it causes one to be guilty of spiritual adultery. We're married to Christ. And yet there are those who claim to go back and have some allegiance to Moses. We're dead to that law. We've been delivered from that law. Hope you remember that. Another reason why we don't keep the law of Moses is because it was written for our learning and admonition. In Romans 15 and verse 4, Paul penned, "For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our what? For our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope." Now, some might get the wrong impression. They might think, well, if the law of Moses is no longer binding, the Old Testament served its purpose, it's been done away, then let's just tear it out of our Bibles. We don't have any place for it. But the same apostle who taught that the law was done away taught the proper use and the value of it, written for our learning, much to be learned from it. We learn where we came from, Genesis 1 and 2. We learn why we're here, the book of Ecclesiastes. We learn that God means what he says and says what he means, that sin has consequences. In fact, we're going to learn that the law was a schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ. And so written for our learning. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 11, when Paul, writing the Corinthians, said all these things happened unto them. And what he's doing is citing examples from the Old Testament. Evidently, he saw value in studying the Old Testament. And sometimes there are those who, when we begin to launch out into a study of the Old Testament, think that we're wasting our time. We ought to fill all of our time with the New Testament. But evidently, Paul saw some merit in studying the Old Testament when he quoted from it. and made allusions to it. And then he said in verse 11 that all these things happened unto them for ensamples. And they're written. Why are they written? For our admonition. We're not under the same specific laws, but we learn things. We learn that as they violated the law of God and paid a heavy price for that, that the wage of sin is death. And so they're written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. And in light of that, Paul said, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. That's 1 Corinthians 10, 11, and 12. And so we don't keep it because it wasn't written for our keeping in that respect. It was written for our learning and for our admonition. Another reason why we don't keep the law of Moses from the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 3 is because it's been done away and it's been abolished. Now, we'll not take the time to read the first 14 verses. You might like to do that. And if you're like me, you may have to read that a few times before it really takes shape in your mind as to what he's talking about. But you'll realize upon a close study of those 14 verses that what he's doing is making a contrast between two testaments. In verse 6, he mentions the New Testament. You might highlight that. And in verse 14, he mentions the Old Testament. Highlight that. And then what you could do if you had a sheet of paper is you could divide that into two columns. On one side have the Old Testament, and on the other side have the New Testament. And we'll quickly notice the distinction that is made in these 14 verses between the two testaments. Notice in verses 3 and 7, as he talks about the Old Testament, he refers to that which was written in tables of stone. 2 Corinthians 3:3. He said, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not in tables of stone, but in fleshly tables of the heart. And then in verse 7, he speaks of the ministration of death, written and engraven in stones. Well, we know that refers to the Ten Commandments. When you go back to the book of Exodus, that is what is referred to in 2 Corinthians 3 as written and engraven in stone. Just read Exodus 24:12 and 34:29-35. But then on the Old Testament side of things, not only is it referred to as written in tables of stone, but it's spoken of as the letter. In verse 6, when he says, who hath made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter. The letter has reference to the Old Testament. And then he says, the Old Testament, the letter, killeth. Notice, he said, for the letter killeth. See that? And then he identifies the Old Testament as the ministration of death. Verse 7. If the ministration of death, what is the ministration of death? He speaks of that which was written and engraven in stones. And somebody might ask, if they were to read that, what's the ministration of death? Well, you know from your reading, from our study, that it has reference to the Old Testament written and engraven in stones. And then in verse 9, the Old Testament is spoken of as the ministration of condemnation. So two different expressions there, ministration of death, ministration of condemnation. He says in verse 7 that it was glorious, But then notice, please, that in this same reading that he speaks of the Old Testament written and engraven in stones, the letter that killeth, the ministration of death or of condemnation that was glorious was done away and it was abolished. He uses those words several times. Last two words in verse 7, done away. You got to highlight that. Verse 11, he said, if that which is done away was glorious. And in verse 13, last word, abolished, And then in verse 14, he talks about the Old Testament, which veil is done away in Christ. And so you have done away and abolished. Now, if the Old Testament continues to be binding as a system of law and practice, then tell me what the words done away and abolished mean. Those must have no meaning. Now, to the New Testament side. In verse 6, he spoke of the New Testament. In contrast with that which was written and engraven in stones, the New Testament is written on tables of hearts. Verse 3, he said, in fleshly tables of the heart. And that harmonizes with Hebrews 8 and verse 10, when the Lord, back in the book of Jeremiah, said that the law would be written in their hearts. And then in verse 6, the New Testament, not spoken of as the letter, but the Spirit. The Spirit. And remember, the Old Testament killeth. Look at the difference. The New Testament giveth life. Verse 6, it's a life-giving arrangement. And it's identified in verse 8 as the ministration of the Spirit. Or in verse 9, the ministration of righteousness. And as the Old Testament was glorious, Paul says of the New Testament that it exceeds in glory. Verse 9. The ministration of righteousness doth exceed in glory. He said it is rather glorious. Verse 8. And he spoke of the glory that excelleth. Verse 10. And so we have a superior testament. And remember, the Old Testament was done away and abolished. Look at the word he uses with reference to the New Testament. Verse 11. He says, much more that which remaineth is glorious. Remaineth. So something in this chapter, you're going to have to agree and admit that something was done away and something remains. Now tell us what that is. If you believe the Old Testament remains to be binding, tell me, please, what was done away and abolished and what remains. But in keeping with the concept that we don't keep the law because it was done away and abolished, Paul taught similarly in his letter to the Ephesians, in Ephesians 2, 14 and 15. He spoke of Jesus Christ saying, he is our peace, who hath made both one, that is both Jew and Gentile, and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances. So he speaks of a middle wall of partition. We have partition walls, walls that divide one room from another. And you could remove a wall of partition without any problem, as long as it's not a load-bearing wall. Well, we're going to be involved in that. If you want to take two rooms and take out that middle wall of partition, open them up into one large room, you can do that. And that's the expression that he uses in reference to the law. I want you to notice the equivalent here. He says, broken down, verse 14, and abolished, verse 15. And then he talks about in verse 14, the wall of partition. And in verse 15, the law. The wall is the law, and the law is the law. And broken down is to abolished what the wall is to the law. And Paul said that the Lord broke down the middle wall of partition. How did he do that? When he abolished the law. And yet, there are those who are trying to build again that wall through the observance of the Old Testament law. And we appeal to you to just leave that wall broken down, left alone where the Lord left it. Abolished in his flesh. That word abolished simply suggests that he ended the observance of the law. And so, I hope you're impressed with the fact that we don't keep the law because it was done away and abolished. But again, we don't keep the law of Moses because it was temporary. In the book of Galatians 3 and verse 19, Paul asks, wherefore then serveth the law? And his answer is, it was added because of transgressions. What's the next word? Till, T-I-L-L, circle that. That's an important word, till. What do you know about the word till? It's temporary. I've heard this illustration lots of times, and I believe it's a good one. Somebody asks you, feed their dog till Thursday. What do you know? They're not giving you their dog, right? Just till Thursday. It's temporary. And so if this is the only passage I've read about the law of Moses, I already know something about it. I know that it was just temporary. Till what? The seed should come. Now I've got to find out who the seed is. Back up in verse 16, we'll learn the identity of the seed. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He saith not, and to seeds, as of many, but as of one, and to thy seed, who's the seed? Which is Christ. So draw your line down from Christ, verse 16, to the seed in verse 19. That'll help you identify the duration of the law. Temporary, till the seed should come, and the seed was Christ. And so the law lasted till Christ came. That's pretty simple, isn't it? I can understand that. And the book of Galatians is a good book to read and study when you're trying to learn the fact that the Old Testament is no longer binding. Because the problem is, Judaizing teachers had crept in among the churches of Galatia, binding fleshly circumcision and Old Testament law keeping. And Paul writes this whole letter to stem the tide of apostasy in those churches over that issue. And so read the whole letter. We're just calling attention to a few things from it. Drop down in Galatians 3 to verse 23. We don't keep the law of Moses because we're no longer under a schoolmaster. Look at it. He said, but before faith came, we were kept under the law, shut up under the faith which should afterwards be revealed. Wherefore, the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith. But after that faith has come, we're no longer under a schoolmaster. Makes a good study. He uses the expressions before faith and after faith. Sometimes the word faith refers to our personal faith, what we believe. But in the book of Galatians, it has reference to the gospel. The faith is the gospel. In fact, in Galatians 1 and in verse 23, the faith was preached. Saul, who now Paul was said to have preached the faith. What did he preach when he preached the faith? In chapter 2 and verse 2, he spoke of that gospel which I preached. And so when he preached the faith, he preached the gospel. And so before faith and after faith has to do with the time before the gospel was revealed and after the gospel was revealed. It makes a good study. There are a lot of differences. Before faith, in this context, we were under the law, right? Galatians 3:23. But after faith, after the gospel, what? He said, no longer under a schoolmaster. Verse 25, and so what was the schoolmaster? He said in verse 24, the law was our schoolmaster. Now listen very carefully. If the law was a schoolmaster, and we're no longer under a schoolmaster, then what do you learn from that? We're no longer under the law. It's just that simple, isn't it? No longer under the law. That's why we don't keep the law of Moses. But then from Galatians chapter 4, we don't keep the law of Moses because the bondwoman and her son have been cast out. Galatians 4, 21 through 31 records what's called an allegory. He said in verse 21, tell me ye that desire to be under the law, do ye not hear the law? For it is written, going back to Genesis 16, that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid and the other by a free woman. And he says in verse 24, which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants. Might underscore the fact that he said these are the two covenants. That knocks the props out from beneath the notion that there's just one continuous covenant. Two, T-W-O. If you can count to two, you shouldn't have any trouble with that. It's just that simple, isn't it? But these two Old Testament women and their sons represent the two covenants. Who are the Old Testament women? Hagar, the bondmaid, and Sarah, the free woman. The son of the bondmaid, Hagar, was Ishmael. And the son of Sarah, the free woman, the son of promise, is Isaac. And that's the difference, that's the contrast. Those two women and their sons represent the two covenants. And then in verse 30, he asked a question that ought to be asked in every Bible study and gospel sermon today. What saith the Scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. Now, if you cast out the bondwoman, Hagar, and her son, Ishmael, what are you left with? You're left with Sarah and Isaac, which represent the new covenant that came from Jerusalem. And he said, so then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. And so I submit to you that we don't keep the law of Moses because the bondwoman and her son have been cast out. And we're not children of them, but we're children of the free. But then taking our study a step further, we don't keep the law of Moses because of the consequences if we do. Have you thought about the consequences of keeping the law of Moses? There are lots of those. It makes a good study in and of itself. Did you know that if you go back and keep the Old Testament law, that it makes justification impossible for you? In Galatians 3 and 11, Paul said that no man is justified by the law. And so you can't be justified. You can't be made right in the sight of God through that. But in addition to that, another consequence, if you keep the law of Moses, it causes some things to be in vain. You ever do anything in vain? It was empty, wasn't it? No value. Well, what's in vain? Well, if we keep the law of Moses, then Christ died in vain. Christ might as well not have died. In fact, when he went to the cross and all that he suffered, that was all for naught if you're going to go back and keep the law. For in Galatians 2 and in verse 21, Paul said, if righteousness come by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. Do you know Christ died in vain? He did if you keep the law of Moses. I tell you another consequence as to something that's in vain. That is, it caused a lot of brethren to suffer in vain. Verse 14 of chapter 3. Or verse 4 rather, chapter 3 and verse 4, he said, have ye suffered so many things in vain, if it be yet in vain? All that they suffered was all for naught. Didn't mean anything if you're going to go back and keep the law of Moses. And you know what? Paul labored in vain. Paul labored more abundantly than they always in 1 Corinthians 15 and 10. I got some news for you, Paul. All of that was in vain. It's all empty. You might as well not have worked as hard as you did. You know why? Because what he said in Galatians 4 and verse 11, I'm afraid of you, lest I bestowed upon you labor in vain. Why did he say that? Well, back in verse 10, he said, ye observe days and months and times and years. And he said, I've labored in vain, if that be the case. And so it caused a lot of things to be in vain, doesn't it? But I'll tell you something else. A consequence. It puts one under a curse. Did you know you're under a curse today if you're going to go back and keep the law? Galatians 3 and 10, as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. For it is written, cursed is everyone that continueth not in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them. So you're cursed. You're under a curse. Why be cursed? Why put yourself under a curse today when you can be blessed? In verses 13 and 14, Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree. Why did Christ become a curse, so to speak? That the blessing of Abraham might come on the Gentiles through Jesus Christ, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. No need to be under the curse when you can enjoy the blessings of the gospel of Jesus Christ. But then from Galatians chapter 4, 1 through 7, if you go back and keep the law, it reduces you to servant status. Paul uses what's known as a difference between being a servant and a son. We're not servants, but we're sons. We're legal heirs. We have right. Read that, Galatians 4, 1 through 7. And so why reduce yourself to servant status when you are a son and can have all the benefits and the blessings of sonship? But also it puts one in bondage. In Galatians 5 and 1, after the allegory with the Old Testament women representing the two covenants, Paul said, stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. You know what you're doing when you go back and keep the law? You're entangling yourself with the yoke of bondage. Another consequence, it makes Christ unprofitable. In chapter 5 and verse 2, Paul said that if you be circumcised, Christ shall profit you nothing. I'm going to tell you how profitable Christ is to you today. If you go back and keep the law, he profits you nothing. No value whatsoever if you go back and keep the law of Moses. And then it causes you to fall from grace. Galatians 5 and 4. Christ has become of no effect unto you. Whosoever you are justified by the law, you're falling from grace. You don't want to fall from grace because by grace are you saved. Ephesians 2 and verse 8. And if you go back and keep the law, it disqualifies Christ from the priesthood. If the Old Testament's still binding, then Christ would be disqualified because you had to be of the tribe of Levi to be a priest, but he is of the tribe of Judah. And the book of Hebrews chapter 7 and 8 is one of the greatest arguments showing that the Old Testament law has changed. For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also the law. And so Christ couldn't be our great high priest if the law of Moses is still to be observed. And consequently, it makes the apostles false teachers. You're saying that the law is still in force, that it's still binding, and it is to be observed, and yet the apostles taught time and again that it's been done away, it's been abolished, we're dead to it, we're delivered from it. And so who are we to believe? I'm going to take my stand with those who are guided into all truth. John 14, 15, and 16, the apostles. Either they're false and you're true, or they're true and you're false, right? And so which is it? And so we don't keep the law of Moses because of the consequences that would be ours if we do. But then there's another reason why we don't keep the law of Moses, and that is from Colossians 2 and verse 14, because it's been blotted out, taken out of the way, and nailed to the cross. Listen to this. Colossians 2, 14. Blotting out. What does that mean, blotting out? That'd be like if you had a marker board and you make a mark on it and you come with the eraser. You've erased it. Wiped out. Blotted out. What's been blotted out? The handwriting of ordinances. Somebody say, what in the world is the handwriting of ordinances? I believe the Bible is its best commentary. And Ephesians and Colossians are companion books. Ephesians emphasizes the church and Colossians Christ. And in Colossians 2:14, you have the handwriting of ordinances. And if you go back to Ephesians 2:15, he speaks of the law of commandments contained in ordinances. And so the handwriting of ordinances of Colossians 2:14 is the law of commandments of Ephesians 2:15. What do you do with the law, the commandments, these ordinances? He said, blotting out, took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross. Some say, well, the only thing that was nailed to the cross was sin. Sin was nailed to the cross, And the law continues to be binding. This passage teaches that the law was nailed to the cross. And then as a result of that, he said in verse 16, "Let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of an holy day or the new moon or of the Sabbath days." And there are those who are judging us for not keeping the Sabbath, not going back and keeping the law of Moses. And Paul taught very clearly that the Old Testament law is not to be used as a standard of judgment. It's a false standard. Why? Blotted out, taken out of the way, nailed to the cross. Those are expressions showing the abolition, the passing of the law of Moses. Another reason why we don't keep the law of Moses is because it was a shadow. A shadow. Colossians 2:17. He said, "Which are a what? A shadow of things to come. But the body is of Christ." And again, in Hebrews 10 and verse 1, we're familiar with a shadow. He said, "The law having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things." And so you're reducing yourself to a shadow when we have the very image. See the difference? And then a 12th reason why we don't keep the law of Moses is because we have a better testament. We like better things, don't we? Maybe you like a better vehicle or a better house or a better job. If you're interested in better things, read the book of Hebrews. That's the keynote, better. Makes for a good study, better things in the better book. We have a better testament, Hebrews 7:22. "By so much was Jesus made a surety of a better testament." In chapter 8 and verse 6, he said, "But now hath he obtained a more excellent ministry, by how much also he is the mediator of a what? Better covenant." Better covenant. Better testament. It's better because Christ is better, being made so much better, Hebrews 1 and verse 4. It brings in a better hope, Hebrews 7 and verse 19. It has better promises, Hebrews 8 and verse 6. And in Hebrews chapter 8, he talks about some of the better promises of the better testament. Those "I will" statements are promises. Verse 10, "I will put my laws into their mind and write them in their hearts." Again, verse 10, "I will be to them a God and they shall be to me a people." Verse 12, "I will be merciful to their unrighteousness and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more." Think about the better promises of the better testament. What a promise. Under the Old Testament, if it was still a force, there'd be a remembrance of sins made again every year. But under the better testament, sins are forgiven and forgotten. Their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. Why would you want to go back to an inferior testament? I don't want to. I'm thankful that we have a better testament. And we have better sacrifices, Hebrews 9:23. And we have better blood, Hebrews 12 and in verse 24. And that's the purpose of the book of Hebrews, to set forth the superiority of Christ over Moses and the law of Christ over the law of Moses. That's another reason why we don't keep the law of Moses. It made nothing perfect. Nothing perfect. Hebrews 7 and verse 19 says, "The law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in of a better hope did." In Hebrews 9 and verse 9, he spoke of the law that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience. And then again in chapter 10 and verse 1, "The law having a shadow of good things to come and not the very image of the things can never," underscore that, "can never with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually make the comers thereunto perfect." Never made perfect under the law. But you and I have the perfect law of liberty, James 1 and in verse 25, and we are complete, we are perfect in Christ. Not in Moses, but in Christ, Colossians 2 and verse 10. Another reason why we don't keep the law of Moses, there's been the death of the testator, Hebrews 9:15 through 17. Now, if you have a will, you realize that when you die, that will becomes effective. And you can't have two wills operative at the same time, right? Could you have the will of Christ and then subject yourself to another will at the same time? Subscribe to the law of Moses? It was the death of Christ that took away the old law and ushered in the new covenant. And if you make a will, you're the testator. And a testament is a force after men are dead, Hebrews 9:17. Otherwise, there's no strength at all while the testator liveth. Back to verse 16, he said, "Where a testament is, there must also necessity be the death of the testator." And so we don't keep the law of Moses because the testator has died. The will of Christ in the New Testament is the last will and testament of Jesus Christ. And it's effective. It's a force. And then finally, we don't keep the law of Moses because we're under the law to Christ. In 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 21, Paul said that. He said, we're under the law to Christ. And when he wrote the Galatians, in Galatians 6 and verse 2, he said, bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill. What do you say to fulfill? The law of Moses. Now, if you just listen halfway, you know that's not what that says, right? Read that for yourself. He said, and so fulfill the law of Christ, the law of Christ, in the judgment. We're not going to be judged by Moses or his law, but by the law of Christ. Jesus said, he that rejecteth me and receiveth not my word hath one that judgeth him. The word that I have spoken, the same shall judge him in the last day. John 12:48. And when Christ took Peter, James, and John up to an high mountain apart and was transfigured before them, there appeared Moses and Elijah the prophet on the scene. And Peter wanted to erect three tabernacles, one for Moses, one for Elijah, and one for Jesus. But God had other plans. While he yet spake, there was a bright cloud that overshadowed them, and the voice out of the cloud that said, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him. And so the day has come, and we no longer hear Moses or the prophets, but Jesus Christ, the divine spokesman in these last days. And Hebrews 1:1-4 affirms, God hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son. And so let's hear the word of Christ. Let's respect the word of Christ and realize that he is the prophet raised up like unto Moses. Back in Deuteronomy, it was predicted that there'd be a prophet raised up like unto Moses, Deuteronomy 18. And that was quoted by Peter and Stephen, Acts 3:7, and applied to Jesus Christ. And they said, him shall ye hear in all that he shall say unto you. Him shall ye hear. You make yourself a spiritual adulteress if you try to subject yourself to Christ and to Moses and the prophets. And so may God help us to make the proper distinction between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And so fulfill the law of Christ. Now, when you point all that out, folks will say, well, you don't believe the Old Testament. You don't have faith in the Old Testament. I suggest we have more faith in it than those who profess to go back and keep it. Because we believe what the Old Testament said about itself. It said it was going out of business. That it's going to be replaced by a new covenant. Jeremiah 31:31-34. The days come, the Lord saith, I'll make a new covenant. And the Hebrew writer quoted that, Hebrews 8:8-13. We believe that. The question is, do you believe the Old Testament? Appreciate your attention. And if you should wish to study further or have some question, I make myself available to do that.